The West African nation of Niger is facing its worst food crisis in years, putting millions of people at risk of starvation. Neil Tierney, the country director for Niger for the aid group Concerned Worldwide, joins us now from Niger, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to today's underreported segment. Hi.
Good day there. How are you doing?
There are around 15 million people in Niger. How many of them are at risk of starvation?
The estimate at the moment is just under 8 million, so around 7.8 million, about 60% of the population.
Often in a crisis like this, children are especially vulnerable. How big a problem is childhood malnutrition at the moment?
Well, childhood malnutrition in Niger is chronic in that there's an ongoing problem in any year, even a year that would be seeing good harvests. This year, the figures are around 380,000 children facing death by starvation. They would be the severely malnourished. Then there's about another 8 million that would be at risk of moderate malnutrition. So it's large numbers of kids at risk. These are the under fives.
Well, we'll talk about the problem with rainfall, but what about the population explosion in recent decades? 2.5 million people lived in Niger in 1950, now 15 million people.
That's correct. I mean, the demographic growth is definitely a major challenge. The average fertility rate for women in Niger is 7, which I understand is the highest in the world. So it's definitely the growth of population makes addressing a lot of these chronic problems even more complex. There are efforts to work on the demographics, but that has to address a lot of sensitive cultural and religious issues. In the immediate, it's about trying to minimize the kids at threat of malnutrition, but then longer-term actions and advocacy, working with the government, what have you, is trying to engage with the problem of demographic growth.
So the government would not come up with a family planning program because it would go against all the cultural traditions?
Well, there is a program within the state policies. But you have to consider that whilst the government here is decentralized, it's a very, very large country. Central government's reach out into villages is extremely limited. So it takes a long time for a policy to take any hold and effect. And whilst in an urban area, people may adjust their understanding more quickly, 85% of the population is based in small, fairly disparate villages where the change of ideas is extremely gradualistic and cultural and religious ideas would be more rigid than they might be in an urban environment.
Does the political unrest in the country exacerbate the situation?
Well, there was a coup in February and the president, Tanja, was deposed, and at the moment there's a military caretaker government in place. In some ways, it was a game changer. That government on taking control has called for a lot of international assistance and has put a lot of stress on trying to address the problem. So in the immediate, the state that's in charge at the moment is facilitating the response. It is trying to engage with the response. So I wouldn't say that the coup occurring has actually made the response or the efforts of agencies like ours more difficult. It's in some ways slightly easier to address the challenges that we have.
Well, that goes against what I just read in the New York Times, which quoted several people in Niger saying that discussing famine and hunger were politically sensitive there and even forbidden in some cases. You haven't heard
that? It's certainly sensitive. Well, I mean, it is sensitive, but at the same time, the state has come out. It's made an international appeal. It's engaging with the United Nations. It has its own emergency response plan in place, which is widely publicized. So I wouldn't say that at present there is any blockage on recognition of the problem. The state itself has published it.
My guest is Neil Tierney, country director in Niger of Concern Worldwide. We're talking about Niger's food crisis on today's Underreported. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I've read that rainfall in the country was 70% below normal. How extensive were the country's crop failures this year?
The average failure, there's a deficit of about a quarter, about 25% across the nation. But that's spread through a band through the center of the country in areas and the villages that we operate in. Some people had no harvest whatsoever or deficits in excess of 90%. So people had meager crops in a good year. 2009 for many communities has produced next to nothing. So the deficit in terms of production is very severe.
Given that rainfall was so low, is there a shortage of drinking water as well?
There's an ongoing shortage of drinking water in Niger. We're just at the cusp of the Sahara here in the Sahel. So access to water for humans and animals is a challenge in any given year. People are dependent on small wells scattered throughout, and often people have to go long distances to collect water. I don't know if there's a marked change in that this year. The pressure is really on food. The addressing water is a much more long-term and a more complex and more costly series of actions.
How much of Niger is desert?
Probably in the region of 60% of it would be desert.
So and what would agriculture be like? I'm sorry.
Sorry, excuse me?
I was asking, so what would agriculture there be like under those circumstances?
Well, there's a band that runs along the south of the country where people produce principally millet and cowpea, which are fairly well adjusted to the arid climate. Most of what people consume at home is millet. That's the crop that people are dependent upon. And that's where they are programming this year is trying to support keep the millet markets moving. A lot of what people eat in any year is imported from neighboring countries like Nigeria to the south. We're working with around 10,000 households transferring cash to them monthly to keep their local markets with demand in them so that products keep coming in. We hope by doing this that people will have a food supply available to them in a way that's cost-effective and in some ways keeps people with their dignity, more so than would just donating food straight to them.
Is Niger unique in this, or are some of its neighbors facing similar food shortages?
The Sahel as a whole suffered a low rainfall last year. So it's in neighboring Mali, in Chad, in Sudan, even as far across as northern Kenya, there are major deficits this year.
Is this something that has been linked to climate change?
There's a lot of discussion on that the people living in countries like Niger are the front line, the first victims of climate change. There's a lot of bodies involved in quite technical studies determining rainfall patterns, and the indication certainly is that these years of erratic and inadequate rainfall are coming closer and closer together, so that makes it harder for people to build up any sort of buffer before they get hit again by another crisis. So it does seem that, yes, climate change is having an impact on these people.
Niger ranks at the bottom of the UN Development Index, but isn't it rich in mineral resources? I remember reading about a yellowcake, of course, the uranium from Niger in the lead-up to the invasion of Iraq.
That's correct. There are large uranium deposits in Niger, and there's a number of large uranium extracting companies that have operations here. The contribution to the tax base of those actions is limited, though. So whilst it does have those resources, the main issue is that the bulk of the population are smallholder, rain-dependent farmers who are essentially reliant on themselves. It's not that the uranium extraction is returning enough into the state that there's any sort of widespread social protection. There's limited actions by the part of the government within their means. But unfortunately, there's not a big enough return from uranium, and there's also oil exploitation starting, which probably will not either yield big enough in terms of reserves to make a major change to the state reserves and its ability to work in social protection or other welfare-type actions.
Mostly Chinese people getting involved in the oil and mineral extractions? Are the Chinese dispensing foreign aid?
There's a range of nationalities involved. The long-term holder in Niger is a French firm. There are now an increasing number of firms, some North American, but there are also Chinese involved. They are involved in different investments in oil and infrastructure, etc. They're not, to my knowledge, involved in dispensing aid at the moment. They're principally engaged with the different extractive industries, which they are that they're working on.
I understand that your group is distributing cash to people in need through the use of mobile phones. Can you tell me a little about how that works?
That's right. This is the first time it's been tried in Niger and I think in Francophone Africa. Essentially, there's a new platform available here in Niger that we've been working with a phone company and a bank. And very simply, after the poorest and most vulnerable individuals are identified, we are working with the phone company to ensure that there's a network of agents at the villages. We can transfer money from our office here in the capital through the telephone network to the recipient woman in the village who locates the telephone company agent. She can send him a text. He confirms he's carrying the cash credit that her message stated she is entitled to. She receives her money. We get an electronic receipt. So we're trying to look for more cost-effective and innovative ways to help people in emergencies. This is something that CONCERN has been working with in Kenya and Haiti. And here in Niger, we're accompanying this with a Professor Aker from the University of Tufts in the U.S. because we want to get as much learning out of this. We want to show, does this work? Is this a way that is cheap, cost-effective, fast to get help to the poorest people quickly to help maintain their own coping mechanisms, keep their own markets alive, to see can that be a useful tool that contributes to other ways of supporting people other than just traditional food aid and what have you. So we started the first transfers a couple of weeks ago, and some of these ladies have never seen a phone, but within a few days they're quickly grasping it. They're being able to withdraw their money. They're buying food in the market. So all the indicators so far are positive, and we hope it'll continue that way. And we hope that because we started early, they'll be able to help prevent their kids deteriorating into a malnutritive state.
But isn't part of the problem that there isn't all that much food in the markets? Is there food coming in? Well, is the UN providing some or private groups?
Well, what we're trying to do is we've been working with the food and the famine and early warning system to do market surveys to watch where is the food coming from. We know that the majority of what the food people buy here isn't domestically produced. It's coming from Nigeria, Benin, Togo, from neighboring countries. So the traders who move that food are part of our network, so to speak. They're aware that there's money available out in the markets, so they will be motivated to move the food into them. So, yes, there's not local crop production to go and buy, but there is food that's being brought in through the existing markets, and that's really the aim of our project. It's to reinforce the way people cope in minor crises, in a major crisis. But in addition to that, yes, we, amongst other partners, are working with the World Food Program, delivering specialized products to help kids who are malnourished. The WFP is also working closely with the state. The state has got its own strategic grain reserve. That's also being dispersed through different mechanisms. So there's quite a reasonable organization, a degree of preparedness in Niger this year to try and reduce the impact of this. Nobody wants to see a return to 2005 where the response was 6 to 7 months too late. And a lot of kids who could have been saved died.
Well, one of the criticisms we've heard about large food aid shipments is that they disrupt the local economy and hurt farmers who may still have food of their own to sell. Is that a concern in Niger?
It's a concern where there's food aid anywhere. But there has been reasonably detailed studies done as to what the impact of cash might be in a given location, what free food might be in another location. These food aid actions are only scheduled to run up to the harvest period. The harvest should be in October. So all of these actions are punctual to help people through what would be called the hunger gap. And in that sense, shouldn't be a disincentive to producers or traders. And the type of food distribution that's going on is not huge volumes of food for everybody. It's being targeted to families who've got kids between 6 and 23 months old, to areas which had the highest deficits. So it's not free food for everybody all the time. It's quite specific. And it should stop at harvest time so that people can sell their crops at reasonable prices, etc.
We've been talking about Niger's food crisis on today's Underreported with Neil Turney, the country director in Niger for Concern Worldwide. Thank you so much for talking with us.
No, thank you very much.